On Crick Info, this is Time Out with Harsha Bhogle.
Welcome everybody once again to Time Out with Harsha, and our show today, as you would expect, celebrates the career of one of the greatest cricketers to have ever played the game, Muthiah Muralitharan. So we've got a couple of people to talk about that. Tony Greig, who watches a lot of cricket in Sri Lanka. They love him in Sri Lanka, and I think he in turn loves Sri Lanka. He's seen a lot of Murali over the years, so delighted that Tony Greig is going to join us on the show. And also Dilip Premachandran, who brings a journalist's eye. He sees more cricket than most people in the world, so he brings a journalist perspective. So that's our team talking about Murali today, and then Rajesh, of course, will come up with his numbers game to try and put into perspective with numbers why Murali was such a sensational cricketer. So we'll start off with the show, and we'll join Tony Greig and Dilip Premachandran. It's always a huge day in international sport when one of the game's finest practitioners decides he's had enough. And so today on Time Out with Harsha, we're going to talk about the exit of none other than Muthiah Muralitharan from Test Match Cricket. And I've got a great friend of Sri Lanka in Tony Greig alongside me. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harsha. Yes, it's a pleasure.
And Dilip Premachandran, who watches cricket from around the world and has an opinion on most things. So Dilip, it's good to have you as well.
Thanks a lot, Harsha. And morning, Tony, as well.
Right, Tony, I'm going to ask you to go back in time a little bit. I'm going to start with you because you actually started to play cricket early around the 70s was your peak. So you saw some of the great bowlers around the 60s as well. Did you imagine 800 would be possible one day?
No, I mean, we didn't really think in terms of these sorts of figures the way we do these days. I think obviously the internet and internet sites like Crick Info have I think brought figures more to the attention of most players. But no, I think we were far more preoccupied simply with how good the players were, not necessarily with their numbers.
And yet, I mean, the mind goes back to when Freddie Truman took 300. I remember reading a couple of books about that as a child and about what an astonishing achievement it was. And if you look at Murali's achievement, he's not played such a larger number of test matches. He's taking wickets at about 6 wickets a test match, and that's unbelievable.
Yeah, look, you're right. I mean, I like you, I remember the individual days. I remember when Lilly went past the record and Lance Gibbs flew down to Australia. You know, that day, you're right, there was a bit of a fuss made on those occasions when someone became number one. The thing about Murali, though, is that he's been number one for so long. Yeah. You know, it seems like quite a long time ago now that he took over this mantle. And I suppose the fact that he retired and everything came together so incredibly made it an even bigger day. But look, I think back to the times that I played against great Indian spinners. You know, that's what really sprung to mind as I was sitting in Gaul thinking, well, was there anyone as good as this bloke? I mean, you know, there'd been some great spinners in the years that have gone, but well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, no one better than this guy.
I think, though, that Murali had one thing going for him, Dilip, and which is that he was very often the number one bowler, and if you excuse, maybe being a little uncharitable to Chaminda Vaz, who toiled very hard for Sri Lanka, but really Murali was their match winner, whereas when you look at the four great West Indian fast bowlers or the three, four Indian spinners, the wickets were shared around because they did an equal amount of bowling. So do you think, Dilip, these 800 wickets are as much a factor of Murali's skill as the fact that he always bowled the largest number of overs because he was their only genuine wicket taker?
Yeah, I would agree with that to an extent because, you know, I remember reading the other day that he bowled about 40% of Sri Lanka's overs in those games. But the flip side of that argument is that, you know, he had to make the breakthroughs on his own a lot of the time, whereas a Shane Warne, for example, or even Anil Kumble, for that matter, probably had better support at the other end and you could say had a slightly easier job working his way into a game. Whereas with Murali, from ball one, practically the pressure was on him to do what his captain needed him to do.
Tony, you've been a great friend of Sri Lanka. You're almost an honorary Sri Lankan yourself, aren't you now? What difference did Murali make to Sri Lanka? I mean, the numbers say that before he made his debut, they had 2 wins out of 38. Was it just that Murali was at the right place at the right time when Sri Lanka were starting to become a more confident test-playing nation? Maybe wouldn't have won as many as they did with Murali, but would have won a few anyway. Or did Murali lead the change in perception among people outside Sri Lanka about Sri Lanka?
Look, I think the timing was absolutely perfect. They needed someone to emerge. that was going to be a real force. The fact that he was a bit of a mystery spinner as well, after a few years, I think added to the whole spice of things. I think that the fact that Arjuna Ranatunga had instilled a bit of confidence into the team, the fact that the opening batsman had implemented a slightly new, more aggressive style in one-day international cricket, all those things, plus Murali and one or two other bowlers, created a situation where the timing was perfect. You know, but at the end of the day, just getting back to those stats, the thing that I question is, who would I have liked in my team? Given that you had the choice of your fast bowlers, and obviously the attack would be good, would I have had Murali as a spinner? Would I have had Warne? Would I have had Underwood or Prasanna or Bedi? Who would I have chosen, or Gibbs? You know, and on reflection, I think that I would have picked Muthiah Muralidharan as my spinner behind a good attack. He had bowled a lot of the overs down in Sri Lanka, but I still think that even if Sri Lanka had have had an Australian-type opening attack, he would have created more problems for batsmen, especially after one or two, you know, perhaps even one or two of the openers or number three had been removed. You know, he would have created just as much chaos.
Dilip Tony makes this point, and I go along with that, that the arrival of Murali also coincided with the coming of age of Sanath Jayasurya, maybe just a couple of years later. But when Murali was at his peak in the late 90s, Sanath Jayasurya was around, and we cannot belittle his extraordinary contribution to Sri Lankan cricket. Aravinda De Silva for 2 years was probably the best batsman in the world, or certainly in a very, very small shortlist of the best players in the world. Ranatunga was a strong captain, and they had some very good supporting cast players like Ashant Tilakratne, like Roshan Mahanama. Vaas had started to come around. So do you go along with that view that Murali's timing was very interesting? Had he come in 3 years earlier, may not have produced the same results?
Oh, certainly. I think it would. It's in some ways sort of analogous to Sunil Gavaskar in India in 1971. People talk about 774 runs in the West Indies, but you also have to remember the support cast that was there. Dilip Sardesai made 612 runs. There was fantastic support from the fielders. The spinners all took wickets. Abid Ali chipped in with the ball. So there were a lot of contributors. And even in Sri Lanka's case, I think back to Chaminda Vaas, of all people, on the tour of New Zealand, I think in 1995, where it was his bowling, even more so than Murali's, that set up the series win. And that was sort of a catalyst for them to go overseas and win in conditions where people never gave them a chance before that.
You know, inevitably the question will come. I mean, Murali has almost been part of the furniture. You know that every time Sri Lanka is in trouble, or even before they've got into trouble, you look around and there's Murali grinning away, waiting with his, you know, just flexing his arms, getting ready to bowl. And now all of a sudden you look around, maybe at point where he used to field once, or maybe somewhere else now, and suddenly there is no Murali. How will it be for someone like Sangakkara, Tony? You've been a captain yourself, and you suddenly look around the field and say, right, the guy who's taken 40% of the wickets is not there, so who am I throwing the ball to?
Yeah, that's definitely a problem. I think Sangakkara might have to turn a little bit more to Joe Wardner, who has been a fantastic captain. I don't think Sangakkara's had a great time of it just lately, and it's going to get tougher. You're dead right about that. If you can't turn to Murali, you're going to have to find someone else. But, I mean, they seem to be quite confident that they'll come up with somebody in the not-too-distant future. But, you know, I don't think they'll ever find anyone quite so different. I mean, this guy had three different deliveries, and they were all totally different, for example, from the sort of off-spin deliveries that we saw from the great Prasanna. I mean, Prasanna basically had the palm of his hand, and so did Bishan Bedi and most of the others, the palm of the hand facing the batsman. Murali introduced something that was so foreign, in so much that because of this real wrist, flexi wrist that he has, he bowled all his deliveries with the back of his hand facing the batsman. And he did that to confuse them even more, as well as, of course, tumbling the ball, the seam of the ball, so that you couldn't see, it made it more difficult to see which way it was spinning. So it seems to me that the things that Murali introduced were, I mean, so way out of left field that it was quite incredible. Batsmen, I mean, I would have thought that he created plenty of sleepless nights for batsmen all over the place.
Okay, here's one for the two of you. I saw Murali bowling in a test match in 94. I did that India-Sri Lanka series in India at that time. And Murali used to pick up a lot of wickets, but they cost him 35, 40 runs a wicket inevitably. And that was before the arrival of the Dusra. So people knew he had the big turning off break, but they knew he had very little else. And one of the things we observed in those days was that when batsmen went down the wicket to Murali, he started pushing it flatter through the air. He lost that wonderful flight that he had. So my own view was that the arrival of the Dusra for Murali, which in itself took a couple of years to perfect and then implement at international level, actually made him a greater bowler. Now, that's in contrast to the case studies of a couple of other bowlers, Saqlai and Mushtaq noticeably, where the arrival of the Dusra coincided with the end of the off-spinner. So, Tony and Dilip, I'll start with you, Tony. What's your view on Murali's Dusra? Did it contribute to making him an outstanding bowler? Or, like with the others, did it take away the potency of the off-break?
Now, look, I think you've got that partially right. I just think that Saqlai was getting towards the end of his career. Murali picked up the Dusra from Saqlai. And I think he took it one step further because I think he was a little bit more flexible. And I've no doubt that he really did become the mystery spinner after he got that Dusra going. And it took him a little while. There's no doubt about the fact that, the little bit of all the controversy, of course, hit at the same time. He hit the headlines and away we went. But there's no doubt that he developed not just the Dusra, which is the one that spins away from the right-hander, but he also had this in-between ball, which was the over, the top spinner, as well as the off spinner. So he had these three deliveries. Bowling from over the wicket in the main, I think that was probably a bit of a problem. He never really got used to bowling around the wicket. And I think the better players of Murali picked his line. If the ball pitched outside off stump, they knew they could play if you're a right-hander for an off spinner. And if it went the other way, you were safe. On the other hand, he used to have to pitch the Dusra because he spins the ball so much, a little bit straighter, and they played the line. I've got no doubt that Lara was easily the best player of Muthiah Murali Dhiran. I think that Murali probably won't say that, especially when Sachin's still around because he's such a nice bloke. And I tried to get it out of him the other day, and he just wouldn't come at it because Sachin was standing right there. But the record of Lara against Murali did go to show that he wasn't that keen against left-handers. But no doubt in my mind that you're right about the fact that the Dusra and the top spinner made him a much better bowler.
I actually seem to remember reading an interview somewhere where he acknowledged that Lara played him better than anybody else. And I think if you try to look back at Murali's career and see how often he's being conquered, I mean, every great bowler goes through phases when the batsmen conquer him. And I think Murali was conquered from time to time before the Dusra came when he only had the off-break. But I think post the Dusra, when he hit his prime, the only batsman who ever really conquered him was Brian Lara in that series in Sri Lanka, which Sri Lanka won 3-0 and Lara made 500-600 runs in a three-game series. And yet, Dilip, all talk of Murali must inevitably include the action. Do you think it helped him take more wickets than Vaughan? Do you think history, when it's written 15 years later, we'll say that Murali had the trickier action and hence got more wickets than Vaughan?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, like Tony said, the very fact that all you could see was the back of his hand was definitely a factor. But I think I agree with what he said about Lara because the numbers just bear that out. I mean, even leaving aside Lara, the two batsmen that I saw him struggled the most against. This was a series that I think Tony did the commentary for in 2004 against Australia.
Dilip, Tony has done commentary for every series Sri Lanka has ever played.
It's a good point. But this, I remember Darren Lehman playing him extremely well in 2004 when Australia won that series after conceding a first innings lead in all three games. And the other batsman in that series was Damien Martin, who just played everything from the crease as late as possible. And those were two other guys who I saw play Murali really well. Obviously, none as adept as Lara in 2001, but these two came pretty close.
And I thought towards the end of his career in 2007, Gautam Gambhir played him very well in Australia in the tri-series that Sri Lanka was in. But Tony, what's your view on this? I mean, there hasn't been another Murali. A lot of people who talk about Murali's action say that it wasn't right, that the ICC were very lenient with him. They allowed the 15-degree flakes to come in. And my own view on that is, even if there is an element of truth in that, then by now somebody else would have been bowling like Murali, and if the action was an advantage, would not have taken as many wickets as him, would have done enough to pick up about 200-250 wickets. So what's your view on the action that led to this whole 15-degree thing from the ICC?
Well, the game can't stand still, and in respect of that no-ball rule, or the chucking rule, if you like, it was originally brought in my view, to curb fast bowlers when there was no protection. And basically what they were trying to do was to stop the baseball-type throw. In other words, the square-on throw by fast bowlers. And, you know, that was perfectly understandable. As soon as crash helmets or helmets were introduced, you know, the danger had disappeared to a degree. And then, of course, Murali brought about all this measuring, the measuring of angles of the elbow. He also brought about a change to the law itself, because the law was a bit of an ass there for a while. You know, they said the bending of the arm, and of course, technically, the ICC and others were scared of being taken to court because you can't bend your arm. Your arm is the top section, then there comes the elbow, then there comes the forearm.
Also, Tony,
we know what they meant, though, but eventually they changed that to the elbow, and then with all the measuring, they found out that almost all bowlers had some flex. And so, really, we'd been living under this misapprehension. Sure, there might have been some, you know, absolutely perfectly classical bowling actions, but I've always been of the view that spinners, that finger spinners, whether they're left-handed or right-handed, had a degree of flex. The bowlers that I played against in India, the great bowlers, were very smart about how they used it. Every now and again, there was one that spun a bit more and bounced a bit more. And so I think that all Murali did was bring that to our attention. I think we've now got a better law. And let's face it, Harsha, if somebody said to you and I that I'm going to come up and bowl with, the back of my forearm and the back of my hand facing the bowler, and I'm going to have a little bit of flex that way, I mean, I would have said, bring it on. You know, so I've got no real problems. I've got a bit of a problem with all the whinges about Murali's action. Invariably, they are players of yesteryear who didn't do quite as well. So I'm 100% behind him. I think we've got to move on, and I think that things like little flexes in actions are the sorts of things that we'd be able to, that we've been able to measure recently, which in the past perhaps we weren't able to measure.
I think you mentioned the ICC worried about going to court, Tony. They might have had nightmares of a certain Tony Greig arriving in Justice Slade's court with a lot of evidence.
Well, I mean, they did ask me for a bit of advice. I mean, I'd picked up this ridiculous situation into the technical side of what the no-ball law said. But now, look, in cricket, I wouldn't have got any great pleasure out of turning the cricket world upside down by going to court again. I mean, I had enough of that during World Series cricket. But the truth of the matter is, this little bloke arrived. I think he's been good for the game. I think that off-spinners that have a little bit of flex now are there because they've got a little bit more to offer. The Dusra is wonderful for the game. That off-spinner was being driven out of the game. He was becoming, you know, I don't know, money for old rope as far as good batsmen were concerned, because there's very little variation for them. Now they've got something. So we've got leg spinners who can bowl googlies and flippers. We've also got off-spinners who can bowl top spinners and also bowl the Dusra. So I think that's just good.
I think we'll move on with a little tribute on the fact that I thought Murali was just fantastic for Sri Lanka. Brilliant coming of age of Sri Lankan cricket. It was geared around Murali, gave them a lot of respect. But inevitably now, Dilip, you must say, where do Sri Lanka go from here? Because you cannot continue living in the past, and your cricket cannot be defined by who is not there. It increasingly needs to be defined by who is there. And one person's passing on inevitably creates an opportunity for somebody else. And Sri Lanka now have four spinners in their ranks, each of whom bowls differently. There's a promising Randeep. He's not been tested in Test cricket yet, but he's looked all right in limited overs cricket. There's Malinga Bandara, I think, who's Delegi, who's now playing a bit in England. But there's Herat, the off spinner, and there's Mendes in the wing. So it's not looking bad, is it, for Sri Lanka with the spinners? I mean, not quite Murali, but there's options there.
It's not bad, but you also have to remember that Bandara and Herath, I think, both into their 30s, at least, or in Bandara's case, almost getting there. Herath is 32. And Mendes, the last few times I've seen him, seems to have been off the ball quite a bit. Randeep's looked impressive in his few one-day outings, but I think the first thing Sri Lankan cricket needs to do is just to accept the fact that there is not going to be another Murali. He's not even somebody whose action and impact can be replicated in any way. You could have an Australian kid coming up 10 years from now who bowls exactly like Shane Warne and has that kind of impact. But forget about having another Murali. There's no one who can come on the scene and try to bowl like that with that level of consistency and that success.
Actually, delve through the numbers and see all the games that you watch, Dilip. Kumble went a year and a bit ago, a couple of years ago. Warne went around that time. Murali is gone now. And if you cast your eye around all those who are playing cricket today, I think the one man who's holding up, who's been a breath of fresh air to spin bowling, is actually Graham Swan from England. But Harbhajan seems to have hit a plateau. Very good some days, not so good on others. Danish Kaneria has plateaued a little bit as well. Are you searching for this next big spinner in world cricket? Are you struggling to find him?
Oh, for sure. I think apart from Swan, like you mentioned, there's really not a spinner out there who excites you. I mean, I have some hope for young Stephen Smith, who seems a very confident type and who looks the sort that won't take a backward step, which is what I really like about Swan. Even if you hit him for a six, he'll still come back and flight the ball and attack you. He won't run away and just spear the ball to 2 feet outside off stump, which seems to be an increasing tendency the way cricket is played nowadays.
Tony, with the game going where it is, with T20 everywhere, is there a spinner you've seen on your travels around the world who's made you sit up and say, ah, now here's the next spinner I want to watch?
No, I think you chaps have covered that. I think you're probably quite right. Swan's the man. I'm really looking forward to seeing him bowl down in Australia in the Ashes. That's going to be very interesting. I think it's very hard. I mean, you can't replace a Warne straight away. One thing I will say is that I've never, ever been confronted by such enthusiasm here in Sri Lanka with their program for youngsters. Aravinda De Silva, who you mentioned a little while ago, is one of the great players, and I agree with that entirely. He is really working very hard right across this country with the youngsters. And it won't surprise me. I think, you know, there's a lot of, when you go around this country, you see a lot of little kids running up with that Murali-type action. So it wouldn't surprise me if you see one emerge with a similar sort of action. But to be as good, well, I doubt it very much. The one thing I don't understand, why the left-arm spinners aren't trying to develop this Dusra. I think there's a great opportunity there to have someone bowling with his left arm doing exactly the same as the finger spinners do with their right arm, you know, and that'll present one of these days we're going to see that happening. But I don't understand why it's taking so long.
Just the last one before we end this segment, Tony. Since you brought it up, I've always wondered why all left-arm spinners only bowl a certain way. I mean, you brought up the fact that they don't seem too inclined to bowl the dusra. They don't seem inclined to produce the left-hander's version of the leg break bowler either. Those Chinaman bowlers come once in a lifetime, almost. Why are left-arm spinners around the world, and you've been a right-hand batsman, very few right-hand batsmen like to face a quality left-arm spinner. Why is left-arm spin bowling so stuck in one kind of bowling?
Yes, I can't answer that, Tasha. I don't know. In my case, I actually enjoyed the ball going away from the bat more. I could handle that better. I didn't really have that many problems with Bishan. I struggled with Prasanna. That's why I think that I've gone for Murali ahead of Warne if it came to my spinner in my team. But you're dead right. I don't think there's an answer to that. You know, it's all a question of hard work. Every single off spinner at the moment in the world should be working hard on developing the Dusra. Look, it doesn't have to turn too much either. Yeah, I mean, you won't do it the way Murali did it because he was so flexible with shoulder and with wrist. It's just a question of getting that little bit of variation going the other way, which is tantamount to the arm ball, really. It's a bit like the old arm ball. We'll see it back. I mean, I just think Murali has opened that gate. He's shown that there's a place for finger spinners. They're not going to get buried, whether they be right-armers or left-armers. And the other thing, of course, that we haven't really touched on is the fact that this guy has been absolutely unbelievable when it's come to handling the nastiness that was thrown his way by not just being no ball, but some of the flack that he's received through his career.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. That's in our next segment, where I'm going to solicit answers about all that happened, which I suspect actually ended up becoming the turning point in Morley's life. All that happened with the calling of the chucking in Australia, where Tony Gregg would have been on air at that time. So we're going to talk about that in just a moment.
Quick Info Talk.
I guess no discussion on Murali would be complete without the events of 1995 in Sri Lanka. And it's my own view that that a cricketer who might have been a touch fragile at the moment and whose career might have gone another way actually toughened up a little bit, became a lot steelier after that. Ranatunga might have had a bit of a role to play. But Tony Gregg, you would have been around at that time when first Darrell Hare, then Ross Emerson called him. That was quite an affair.
Oh, it really was. I mean, there's no doubt that Hare thought, and I think that, you know, Darrell Hare was very, very upfront about this. He really did think that under the laws at the time that Murali Dhiman had a suspect action, and Hare, being the sort of character he was, a former policeman, decided that he would do it the way it had always been done. I had a little bit of a problem with this because things had changed a bit since the days of Sid Buller and no-balling Jeff Griffin. All those years ago, there tended to be a little bit more, talk amongst umpires and the ICC. But Hare decided he had to do it, and he went out there and did it. He didn't then think that he got the support that he should have done, and as a result of that, a few of his colleagues, Emerson was one of them, decided to follow through almost in support of Darrell Hare, as opposed to, in my view, actually going out there to do it the way it should have been done. So that match in Adelaide, when Emerson in particular called him, when Murali bowled the leg breaks as well, I've got to say, that was against England, that was one of the nastiest days cricket that I've ever seen.
And yet do you sometimes feel somewhere that the old rule where it was up to the umpire to call was followed by Darrell Hare at that time? Murali's action looked very suspect. We now know that it was some kind of optical illusion because his arm is bent differently. But did you sometimes think that you needed an umpire like Darrell Hare to do that, or do you think his style was wrong? Because the current system allows a bowler to keep on chucking till such time as the ICC does its 15-degree rule and then bans him. So do you think you need to return to the umpire actually taking the call himself?
No, I don't, Harsher. I think this has become too much of a career. It's so important, and with the technology we've got these days, I think we can be a little bit more certain about these things before we go and toss a career out of the window. I mean, imagine if Muthiah Murali Dhiman had been buried after that first the first time that Hare called him, which is what used to happen. I'm happy with where we've got to. I'm not for one second going to blame Darrell Hare, because I think it needed something like Hare to do what he did for us to get to the next stage. There have been plenty of bowlers now all over the place who have been considered to be a little bit suspect, who then are taken away, they're measured, and there's a little bit of remedial work can sometimes fix these guys. I also think when we're talking about spinners, we're talking about a different ball game. These guys aren't going to kill anyone, and batsmen have had it so good that I don't think that it's a bad thing that more spinners are bowling.
Thank you very much, Tony. You were pretty much the man on the spot, as you like to be, and often have done your homework well. So you're probably the best person to talk about it. Thank you very much for taking some time off in beautiful Sri Lanka, and hope you continue to have a great series down there.
Lovely to talk to you, Harsha. Good luck, and we'll see you around soon.
Pleasure. Take care. Thanks a lot for joining us, Tony.
Quick Info Talk.
Right, here we go then with a numbers game, and it's time to get Rajesh in and look at Murali's career from a purely numbers perspective. That in Murali's best years, January 2000 to December 2008, who was the second highest wicket taker for Sri Lanka among specialist spinners? And there's a reason I suspect that Rajesh has put in the word specialist spinners. Do you want to give it to us?
Well, yeah, the reason I said specialist spinners was because obviously I wanted to exclude Sanath Jayasurya, who is clearly the second highest after Murali. But if you only look at specialist spinners, in this period, Murali, by the way, had 534 wickets in 75 matches. The next highest, Upal Chandana and Rangana Herath with 30 wickets.
Those are really incredible numbers. Jayasurya, by the way, I think got 90-odd wickets, didn't he? Something like that.
Jayasurya had 69 in this period.
Yes.
But Murali had, 18 times more wickets as the next best specialist spinners in Sri Lanka. So, it just tells you the story.
In fact, the stats with Murali and the rest of the Sri Lankan bowlers, with the exception of Vaz, are quite sensational, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I was just looking at all bowlers, even including Vaz. Vaz, meanwhile, took 243 wickets during this period. So, those two, and then there's a huge gulf between them and the next bowlers. I was just looking at the entire Sri Lankan team. They took 1,213 wickets, that is bowler wickets, during this period. So Murali took 44% of all wickets taken by Sri Lankan bowlers, and he bowled about 36% of the overs. I was just looking at some other stats. Murali's average was 19.5. The other bowlers averaged almost 36, so again twice the average. Murali took a wicket every 49 balls, the others every 70 balls. Murali had 49 5-4s, the others had 14. So, I mean, the numbers are just so that's the problem, I think, with that Sri Lanka might have going forward. Just how do they replace Murali, and who do they get who's even, 40% as good as him?
Yeah, just before we sign off, I've got another little point on that. Murali took 44% of the wickets in that peak period, and he bowled 36% of the overs, which means the others, even though they conceded many more runs, bowled 56% of the overs, didn't they? They took 56% of the wickets and bowled 64% of the overs. So it's actually not that bad, looking at the percentage of overs bowled and the number of wickets. So maybe to some extent, Murali's career was also defined by the number of overs he bowled.
That's true. He did bowl a lot, and it was also the kind of conditions that he usually bowled in. A lot of matches at home in Sri Lanka where pitches, obviously favored him, and he did bowl a lot of overs. But then again, you'll need someone who can give the kind of support that Murali gave to Malinga in this match. You need someone who can just bowl that many overs, sustain the pressure over such a long period of time, and take wickets. So it'll be interesting to watch who can do that over next for Sri Lanka.
There's no doubt at all. Trust Rajesh to come up with numbers like that. It's just astounding that Murali took 534 in that period, and the next best were Upal Chandana and Rangana Herath with 30. 534, one extreme, 30 the other. Rajesh, thank you very much for coming up with these little nuggets, and hopefully you have something more for us on the next program.
Thanks, Asha. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Take care.
Quick Info Talk.
Hi, there you are. We've had a lot of fun talking about the life and times of Murali Dharan. I've had a couple of quite interesting experiences with him. We were doing a program in Colombo at the time, and he actually showed us the flex on his elbow. I actually saw him bowling with the brace on. But for all the talk about Murali, to me, the one thing that stands out is something that is beyond the cricket field. And that is that I believe Murali had reason to be, could have easily had reason to be angry, could have carried this wound with him all the time, could have been petty, could have carried a lot of rancor with him, could have become very negative in the way he approached life in the game. And yet, for all that, what you remember is Murali's big eyes and the smile that followed a wicket. So I thought, in spite of all that happened around his life, Murali played the game with tremendous zest. And I think that there's a legacy for everybody else, that you're all privileged to play the game, and you played with a kind of zest and smile that Murali showed. Well, there you are for all those fans of Murali and all those cricket fans. I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Dilip Premachandran and Tony Gregg, who was actually the man on the spot while all the action was taking place in Australia, and as usual to Rajesh. If you want to write to us at timeout@cricinfo.com. That's T-I-M-E-O-U-T, timeout@cricinfo.com. Thank you very much for joining us today.
This is Cricinfo Talk.